This is the Mojo, the Meaning of Life and Business podcast, where life and business intersect. Hosted by Jennifer Glass, CEO of Business Growth Strategies International and BGSI Coaching. We are dedicated to your success. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mojo, the Meaning of Life and Business. Very often, whether it's in business or it's in life, we follow stories to get us to where we want to go. If you think back to being a kid, your parents read you stories or they told you stories before going to bed. If you are a parent, maybe you told your own kids stories before they were going to bed. I know that with my daughter particularly, I needed to create a whole story every night before I put her to bed to get her to fall asleep. And we just kept on building based on that story from the night before. It's kind of one of those things that I'm working on parenthetically as a possible children's book, in terms of that whole building out the story from what I used to tell my daughter. For those of you that know the story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that's exactly how that came into being too. And that's a really interesting story, but that's, again, for another time. You can always Google it, though, if you want more information on that. But in terms of storytelling, we have a really incredible guest on the show today who's going to help us understand more about storytelling, why it's important for business, how people are in a position to really be following stories better, and going from there. And I will, before I tell you about my guest, tell you stories sell, facts tell. Just keep that in mind as you're listening to our episode today. So Paolo Simoes is a passionate visual storyteller, former Sony Picture executive, film director, and a producer. He's the founder and leader of a fantastic team of visual marketers at Brios Media, where he helps clients create dynamic videos that attract, engage, and convert. Paolo, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Jennifer.
Absolutely. Thank you. So Paolo, let me ask you, if we're looking at storytelling and we're looking at the way that they connect with people, before we even actually jump down into that rabbit hole, let me ask you, how do you define story before we even get into connecting with people?
Wow, that's a deep one. It sounds simple, but it's not. I think stories are things that happen in our lives, right? And it's the way we communicate. It's the way we engage and how we connect with people. If you think about even cavemen, you know, they were telling stories, they were writing and drawing in the caves, things related to their daily activities, hunting and things like that. And I think storytelling is really part of our DNA, our culture. And it's probably one of the only universal things that have passed through time from generations to generations. People have been telling stories. You know, you pointed out your daughter at night. It's how we learn. It's how we, you know, like to consume entertainment, whether it's movies, music is, you know, storytelling. So storytelling is really, it's really about life. And we do it in different ways, but it's all over us. And it's part of doing business as well.
Thank you. And it's really funny you mentioned the cavemen drawing the art on the wall as their means of telling stories, because I just think about what we're doing today and we're right back with emojis. Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, we get text messages and it's all just emojis, or you see on social media type, you know, a GIF or just an emojis, what you're doing today. And you're telling whole stories just by those pictures. Symbols. So it's really interesting how we went right back. So Paolo, let me ask you, if we're looking then at storytelling as it relates to business, why is a story going to be better? And I know in the beginning, in the introduction, I mentioned stories sell, facts tell. But if you can, first of all, I guess, walk us through maybe how that idea applies to storytelling and how, from a business specifically, a story is going to be better than just, we have 92% of the world using our products, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yeah, the list of benefits. Yeah, so I think it's probably important for us to go back a little bit more and see what science says about storytelling. And I've done some research a few months ago. I was putting together a webinar, and I did some studies, and I actually found some pretty interesting things that scientists prove that our brains are wired to detect patterns in stories. And so you mentioned your daughter. Think about when we were kids, how we like to watch the same movies over and over and over again, right? Especially cartoons, maybe Disney films. And kids memorize those lines. They know it by heart. As we grow up, perhaps we don't like to watch the same movies over and over again, but we love those patterns. If you think about a romantic comedy, the patterns of romantic comedies are the same. Every single romantic comedy you will watch is going to follow the same pattern. So you have different characters, different locations, but the patterns are the same. So we're wired that way. And to answer your question, there are a few interesting things that happen with good storytelling that takes place in our brain. There are three areas of our brain: the frontal cortex, motor cortex, and the sensory cortex, that have to deal with emotional engagement, perception of movement, and then the five senses. And so when we engage with good storytelling, our brain releases three neurochemicals: cortisol, dopamine, and oxytocin. And those three neurochemicals are actually responsible for generating in us the attention, focus, awareness. Dopamine helps us with the arousal. It generates interest. And then oxytocin gets us engaged. That's where we develop pro-social and empathic behavior. And so essentially our brains get wired with good storytelling, and that facilitates the whole process of us engaging with a new prospect, instead, as you said, of trying to sell on features and benefits. Storytelling is a much more effective way to attract, engage, and convert prospects.
Thank you. And it's really funny, again, going back on the rom-com. And I know the formula as an example for all the Hallmark movies. You know exactly where things are going to be. You know that at 17, 18 or so minutes of the 2-hour movie, there's the first commercial break. You know, at about an hour and 40 is where there's the big fight, that something happens and they blow up. And then at an hour and 53, 54 is where they start reconnecting. Sometimes it may take a little longer, but like you said, it's all formulaic in that regard. But mysteries, it's, again, there's a lot of formula that goes into that idea in terms of just looking, how do we do that? And like you said, there is that neuroscience behind it that does connect us back to what it is that we're looking for by seeing specific patterns that we can pick up. Oh, this means it's going this way, this means it's going that way, and we can do that. So if we're looking then at, again, like a business, like we said, that's going to be using stories to sell. So we know if we see certain commercials, even, they are commercials, and I'm going to pick on the Dove campaign for girls, because right. I personally love that campaign. There's a reason behind it, right? I mean, during the Olympics, there's also the commercials. Procter & Gamble is a big one that does the parents that sacrifice to get their kids to training every morning and eventually into the Olympics. So looking at it from that perspective, if a business is going to be going out there with that kind of a campaign, is that connecting more because we can all relate to those stories? Like we're all kids, we're all, you know, there's a girl that we all know that is not doing something because of whatever it is, like a girl in one of the, as I think it was in the Super Bowl this year, Dove's had a commercial that many girls stop playing sports when they reach a certain age, just because it's no longer the cool thing or whatever it may be. But there's ways that we can stop that and keep encouraging our young girls to still keep playing sports. So is that looking at it from the story aspect, is that giving us more of that benefit in terms of like connecting? Is that the reason they're doing those emotional heartstring pulls?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a combination of format. For example, you mentioned commercial, that's a format of storytelling, right? It's usually short. The tone and style has to do with whether you're using an emotional appeal, for example, or comedy. If you listen to or watch a insurance commercial, they all go the comedy road, right? Because there's really nothing sexy or emotional about insurance. They don't really want to show anybody having to use insurance, right? And so they take the comedy route. So I think it's a combination of both. And I think it's also a combination of using the right or using the storytelling elements within that story. I think that's the other important part.
Right. One other commercial that I just have to throw out there, again, for those that are of a certain age, they may remember it. In the days after the September 11th attacks, the Budweiser Clydesdale horses were in, I believe, Liberty State Park in New Jersey, right across the Hudson River. And I remember the horses bowed their heads at the smoking pile across the river. And from a purely emotional perspective, I mean, there was absolutely, I don't even remember if Budweiser had Budweiser even mentioned in the ad. I mean, you knew it was the Clydesdale horses from Budweiser, but I don't remember the ad, if they actually ended it even with Budweiser, as much as, you know, America Strong or whatever, you know, we may have been saying at that point. We'll never forget, probably. But as it relates to that kind of an idea, I mean, those are really powerful messages coming in, whether it's a 15, 30, 60 second spot or infomercial kind of length commercials also that we can get at. But we also look at testimonials then as what we can do. And I mean, again, I'm going to pick on commercials here because why not? Consumer Cellular has one of their ads that they say people normally give testimonials sitting on their couch, but our people are too busy living their life and everything. And they're out there, and they gave them a little orange background that they walked around with, a little, you know, thing on a holster kind of thing. And they were talking about what they're doing and Consumer Cellular in that regard. So again, that's kind of looking in the humorous way of what you were saying from where we're going, but how do testimonials and stories, how does that connect in terms of a business, a brand, and gaining additional value?
Yeah, you mentioned a great one. I think customer testimonials are probably one of the most powerful ways for you to tell a story without sounding like you're selling something, right? Because you're using the voice of an unbiased opinion to reconfirm something. And it also helps explain perhaps things that other people are curious to learn, right? So let me answer that. Let's look at the five elements of storytelling. You need to have a protagonist in a story. Usually in Hollywood, that's the hero. you need to have a conflict. It's what the hero is struggling with. It's what he wants to overcome. You need to have an antagonist. In movies, that's the villain, but in real life or in business, could be anything that stops the protagonist from achieving his or her goals. The climax of the story is the plot, the part of the plot where you have the most tension, when everything, you know, kind of seems like lost, you don't know what's going to happen. And then finally you have the resolution, which is hopefully the outcome. So you need to have as much as you can those five elements of the story, even in a customer testimonial. So I'll give you an example. Let's say that you are a homeowner and you have used a flooring company, right? Let's say that you you had some issues on your house, you have some flooring issues, you're going to sell your house, but in order to sell the house, you need to fix your flooring before you do that. So your neighbor tells you about the flooring company they used. And so you call them up and you find out that they have a finance program. So you take on them, you make a selection, they come in, they fix your flooring without having to put any money down. You finance that. You're able to list your home, you sell your house. And once you do that, you can pay your loan. So that flooring company helped you solve your problem. So imagine that I'm asking you to verbalize, to tell that story. You, in this case, you're the hero, right? You had a conflict. You needed to fix your flooring, but you didn't have any money. That was your struggle. The antagonist here was the fact that you didn't have any money, or perhaps you didn't know how to solve your problem. The climax of this story is, you know, whenever you saw your flooring, you can explain your emotions, how that helped you sell your house. That's the climax of the story and the resolution. You're happy, you're going to recommend that company to your friend. So in a minute, you can basically have those five storytelling elements. And people can relate to that. Remember that we talked about patterns, right? Creating patterns, and people are just attracted to that. And so people can easily incorporate storytelling in their business. Like you said, it's a lot more effective to do that rather than talk about features and benefits.
Right. And it's interesting. I mean, you talk about those five steps and how everything is going to be in play with those five steps in terms of the process here. So here's a big question though. If you're missing one or more of those steps, does it still connect or does it miss the mark?
I think it can connect. Sometimes you don't have all of the elements clearly defined. And also you don't have, you know, 2 hours, like you said, you know, to tell your Hallmark story, right? So, you know, depending on what your video, if it's a 30-second commercial, then you're probably focusing more on one or two of those elements to make a connection with your audience. So you may not have all of them all the time, but it's still possible to make a connection. You just have to be smarter. And I think the key to all of this that we sort of didn't talk about, but it's crucial, you got to know who your audience is, right? So you can craft stories that will actually be meaningful to them, that will engage them, and that they will care to hear.
Going back to the neuroscience and how we're all, like you said, programmed to see the patterns, and knowing with the five facets of storytelling, like you said, if we're missing one, we still may get it because it may not be as fleshed out, especially 30 seconds. Time is limited, right? You can't get everything through. But is there anything, though, that can help make the point stronger in that 30-second piece, like any of those five facets or the neuroscience aspect that we need to have there, that like if you don't have this piece in particular, it's going to miss?
Yeah, I think so. But I'll give you an example of a recent project we had. We had a local garage floor installing company come to us. They wanted to do some commercials for Facebook. And he wanted to be able to be disruptive in the sense that he wanted people to be able to look at it and understand what the commercial was about, because, you know, people tune off, as you know, real quick. So in the first few seconds, you needed to know what you're looking at. And his biggest struggle was that people that he was competing against, his competitors, were not honest people. They were lowballing. They were playing all kinds of tactics, you know, with pricing, no warranties. And so we created a campaign, and we created this Chuck in a truck character that is the horrible floor installer. And so off the bat, Chuck looks at the camera and says, "I am Chuck, and I'm your floor installer." And then, you know, in 5 or 10 seconds, you would see Chuck doing these horrendous things, right? That nobody in their right mind would hire somebody like that. So we use exaggeration to create humor to make a point that this company, you know, his company does it different. He's not Chuck in the truck. So that's just one example to answer your question on how, you know, you can kind of go in a specific route and highlight something to make your point. You mentioned, you know, the Budweiser before. Sometimes you have no dialogue, you know, there's nothing going on. The images are so strong that you can relate to. And you know, you can establish that connection with somebody just by showing images. The music is also very impactful in helping create that, the tone and style. So there are a lot of different elements that can help you tell that story more effectively.
So I'm going to go back to another question, and this is a basic fundamental in marketing, but does frequency help with the story also? Because like we know that with touches before somebody's ready to buy, it can be as much as 100 or even more touches for somebody to buy something that they're not immediately thinking of. Is a good story going to help speed that up potentially in terms of if you're hitting the right mark? Is that possibly going to be making a difference with the right story, the right elements, the right looking at how all of that is set, or is that not as involved? And I'm just thinking as an example, again, we're gonna pick on commercials in this show, whether or not we spoke about that before. You know, we'll look at commercials. So let's look at some of the nonprofit organizations that advertise a lot. You have St. Jude, you have Shriners, you have the ASPCA, organizations like that. And their sale is a donation. Doesn't matter, by the way, what your sale is. It's still somebody is giving you money for something. But is that kind of connected, again, the more times I see it? Or is it just, if I can really pull the heartstrings a little bit more, and before we go there, I'll just quickly say, I wrote a letter when I was a fundraiser and I showed it to my secretaries and they said, here's my wallet. I wrote that so playing on the heartstrings, so badly, so good. I mean, depending how you look at it.
Right.
But even my secretary was like, here. So when you think about it in that perspective, does the story make that better in terms of helping move that along?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think nonprofits, they rely on telling stories maybe more than anybody else, because if you don't identify with their stories, you're not going to donate. right? So I need to understand what they do. I need to care about what they do, and I need to be compelled to help, right? So you got to pull those strings very well. And most likely written things are not going to be as effective as, you know, things that will have music, videos, you know, images, as you mentioned. So I think for nonprofits, maybe it's a little bit less about, different campaign styles and more catching people at the right time, in the right place, in the right season. For example, end of the year, you see a lot of these emotional nonprofit things. They're also capitalizing the fact that you can still make a donation before the year end for your tax deductions. And, you know, so I think those things play out a little bit as well. You think about ESPN, the times that they, push the Jimmy V Foundation, right? Cancer awareness and things like that. I think nonprofits tend to focus more on the right time to push those messages. And I think products and services, they will have a more traditional approach where they will have like a Super Bowl commercial. You might have a 30-second or 60-second commercial, and then they'll cut down, you know, to smaller bites. And then once you've seen a few times, then you're seeing the 15-second version of that, right? So it's more call to action. I've seen that. They're just reminding you of their call to action so you can, you know, go buy it. So I think nonprofits operate a little bit different than products and services.
So I want to ask you on that note, and I don't know if you saw the Temu commercial or commercials in the Super Bowl, and they ran three of them in the Super Bowl, the exact same ad.
Yes, I saw that. I was pretty surprised.
Right. I mean, at what was it, $14 million, I think it was, a spot, something like that.
You got to be selling a lot of cheap products to pay for that, right?
Right. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It was $7 million a spot, a 30-second spot. So it was $21 million or so that they spent on that. But still, I mean, $21 million, like you said, is a huge amount of money,
right,
to be investing in Super Bowl ads for the exact same thing. But do you think, though, that that commercial actually hit the mark?
It depends on who you ask. For example, I am aware of that because my wife, you know, buys Temu. So I'm already familiar with it. I was surprised to see they're playing with the big boys like that. But I would imagine that somebody who's not familiar with them, that was a great way for them to, you know, to make a mark. And I'm sorry if I kind of make another comment on that. Probably the commercial that surprised me the most was Kennedy's.
I was just going to say Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s presidential. Right.
Because yes, he's running now as an independent. What better platform for him to let everybody know that he's running? Because absolutely, he's not going to get any coverage. He's not going to go, you know, and have debates with anybody. I thought that was brilliant because he's independent. He probably put, I don't know, a good chunk of money from his overall budget to let people know that he's still running and what he stands for. I thought that was a brilliant move.
Without a question. I mean, $7 million to get hundreds of millions of eyeballs on that ad just to spark the conversation. I think, like you said, that was a brilliant move on his part. I'm a little surprised that he did it, but I'm not on the same token, just because if you think, like you said, and like I said, I mean, 7 million for hundreds of millions of eyeballs is, where else are you going to buy that kind of value?
Right.
But so if we're looking, staying in line with commercials, and we're thinking like the Super Bowl commercials or the Oscars commercials, things along those lines, where you know that there's more people watching and so there's a premium in those spots, what is the pressure to get it right in the story and everything that they are sharing. And again, in a couple of months, we've got the Olympics coming up, and there's going to be that as a major focus for the advertisers. So from a story perspective, is there like the bigger push just to really make sure you're nailing it?
Yeah, I kind of go back to my days at Sony, where maybe 4 or 6 months after the release of a big film, we as a company, more LA, they would do these focus groups, and they would create different types of commercials, and they would show to different people, and they would ask people's reaction, to those commercials, and see how they felt about the character. Did they understand the story? Do they want to see it? So all of these companies, that are investing in a Super Bowl commercial, I guarantee you they're doing focus groups and figuring out, the best way to communicate with their audiences, because they're putting a lot of their, eggs on that one basket. They want to make sure that they're getting it right. And sometimes I'm surprised, because I think some people miss the mark. I think there's some pretty dud commercials out there, that miss the mark, and others are, sometimes even simple, but they make it unforgettable.
There are so many of those ads that you just don't remember what it was even for.
Exactly.
And the one thing I will say, Temu certainly did get us remembering the fact that they had three ads in the Super Bowl, good or bad. At least they did exactly what they set out to do. We're still talking about it.
Yeah, and they were the same, I think.
That they were there.
Yeah,
and they just repeated.
Yeah, they just repeated the ad.
Right. And I'm thinking back, and I don't remember most of the other commercials.
Yeah. Can I ask you this? What did you have a favorite commercial out of the ones you saw on the Super Bowl?
I think I like the Dunkin's commercial with Ben Affleck, J-Lo, Matt Damon, right. Tom Brady, those guys.
Uh-huh.
Only because it was, again, it's part of a story.
Right.
Again, connecting back to years past, and how Ben Affleck is always with Dunkin', Boston. You've got all the, again, where Dunkin' is from and everything. So there's a lot of that connection. And you see how over time it just kind of follows through, and how J-Lo was with that whole piece and everything. So I think personally for me, that was one of them that really hit. But like I said, my favorite though was the Dove, for her campaign. But again, they've been doing that for a long time. So that wasn't right. Something specific to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I did like the Dunkin' a lot, and I like the Kia a lot. If you remember that one, the little girl ice skating.
Yes.
I thought that was probably the most emotional, appealing commercial they had. That was really good.
Right. Again, like you said, stories, when you're showing the sacrifice, when you're showing all of that, that does make a big difference. So, Paolo, let me take a turn. And I know that you've got a 6-step process to make storytelling easier. Can you walk us through that 6-step process, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we should probably point out, we're talking about commercials and TV and all that, but with technology today, anybody can tell a story, and anybody can tell a story about their business. I think it's about being smart and understanding, what we talked about, the power of storytelling, learning, understanding these elements, and then putting them in a framework. And that's what I'll share with you now. So the 6 steps, what I call the Made Easy Brand Story Guide, the first step, and I kind of touched on that, is you need to define your main message. And one of the big no-nos that I see a lot of people make is people trying to say too much with one message. And you're probably seeing people do that when they get into marketing. So you got to define your message, make sure that you're telling one main message and you have a clear call to action. So that's step one. Then step two, understanding your buyer persona or who your audience is, so you can craft your message talking to, you know, directly to their needs and consider, you know, demographics, their pain points and things like that. Then step three, we sort of touched on that as well, is determining the tone and style. And that's really important because tone and style have everything to do with the visual and the emotions that you are creating. So you need to make sure that whatever it is that you're creating, it's not going to create contradiction to your message. So for example, we talked about, you know, commercials that are funny. If you put a music piece or a song that is not funny, then people are not going to get the humor. So there are a lot of visual and audio elements that will help, you know, sort of set the tone and style. Step four, you got to choose the voice properly for your story. And the voice could be really anybody, but it's who's narrating your story. Is it you? Is it a third party? Are you, for example, using a customer in a testimony to tell your story, right? Are you doing a voiceover? Are you interviewing somebody? So there are different ways, but you got to pick the right person to tell your story. Choose your voice. And then step five has to do with story format. And I always like to compare story format to a vehicle. If you're going to transport a sofa from your house to a storage, you're probably not going to use a motorcycle or a hatchback. You need to have a truck or a van. So if you want to transport your people or your audience from point A to point B, the right format will help you do that. And that will be, as you mentioned, a customer testimonial or a commercial, a about us video. So that's the format that we're talking about here. And then the last thing is think about distribution. Where are you going to distribute your video? Are you going to be doing some social media campaign? Are you going to send out via email? Are you going to post that on your website? The way you're going to share, and even on social media, some platforms, you need to think about format as well. TikTok is different than Facebook. It's different than Instagram. It's different than LinkedIn. So creating videos and stories based on how you're going to distribute will also impact the way that that's going to be received. So again, just to recap, define your message, create your buyer's persona, determine your tone and style, choose the voice of your story, select the right story format, and optimize your stories for distribution properly.
Thank you. And it's really funny you mentioned sofa, and the first thing that popped to mind was the episode from Friends where they're trying to get the couch up the stairs. We're just talking story. And it just like that sofa, Friends couch going up and everything. And I mean, our brains, again, we're wired to connect to certain points, whether it's just a word, a sound, a smell, they all have an emotional memory. And there's something that just connects. And so when you can zero in on those different aspects, we start just remembering different things and can put us into a different position to be more favorable to buy, less favorable to act, whatever it may be, just because of that emotional connection. So that's, I guess, another piece of that whole overall storytelling puzzle is what is the connection emotionally for us?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's always that exercise. Who is my audience? What do they care about? how can I connect with them, right? How can I tell a story that in a way that they're going to care? And so, you know, that's what we like to do when we talk to our clients. We like to build everything from ground up and kind of go through that process and help them figure out, you know, exactly how to do this more effectively.
Right. And so there's a lot there in terms of what we do. And the other thing I will quickly say is that when it comes to stories, even in presentations that you're giving to prospective clients, whether you're doing it one-to-one or you're doing it in front of a larger room, if you use stories to help illustrate how your clients got the benefit, or even as a guest on a podcast, you come on the show and you're telling stories. Listen, this is how my client went from A to Z. This is how you can go from point A to point B and everywhere in between. There's a lot more value just because then it's no longer me simply saying this is what to do. It's showing real life example. Again, going back to the testimonial, it's the social proof. It's the customer who's saying it. It's not you. So if you can illustrate even how all of that works in story form, it's going to connect that much more.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, not to get off the subject, but just to reinforce what you said, if you think about, you know, the Bible or any religious teachings, it was all about stories, right? Jesus was telling stories. Anything you go on YouTube, you know, motivational speakers, it's all about stories. And that's what people connect to and engage.
Absolutely. Thank you. So Paolo, let me ask you, people have been listening to our conversation for the last 40 or so minutes, and they're really interested in getting more information. How can they connect with you?
Yeah, you can visit our website, briosmedia.com, B as in boy, R-I-O-S as in Sam, briosmedia.com. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. Paolo Simões on LinkedIn. And these are probably the two easiest ways to connect with me.
And we'll be including all that information in the description as well. So thank you. So Paolo, one of the questions that I like asking my guests is, what do you define success as?
I think that's probably one of the hardest questions that everybody ask themselves, right? It's not easy. I would probably define success as being content. I think people will have different definitions of success. And maybe if you asked me this 20 years ago, I would have given you a much different answer. To me, it's really not about necessarily, you know, position you have or money or this or that. It's whatever you define for your life, whatever is important to you, living according to your values so you can have peace and being content where you are and with whom you are. To me, that's success.
Thank you. And it's definitely one of those easier ways to look at it. You know, like you said, being content with what you have, where you are, it's always a good way to look at it. Thank you. And the other question that I have is, if you were to go back 20 years ago, like you said, if I were to ask yourself 20 years ago, the definition of success, and you were to tell your 20-year-old former self, what advice would you give yourself 20 years ago?
I would probably tell myself to enjoy the journey a little bit more. I think between my 20 and 40 years, you know, when I was, especially, you know, in the movie industry, I was just so busy running and trying to, you know, grow and, you know, challenging myself, which was great. I kind of wish I had spent a little bit more time enjoying the journey and think about some of the places I've been, I lived and travel. I wish I had taken more time to sort of, you know, enjoy a little bit more of those experiences than I did.
Absolutely. And enjoying the journey is important, right? I mean, we only live once. And if all we're doing is running from place to place, and like they say, stop and smell the roses sometimes.
Yeah.
We need to really keep that in mind, because otherwise we get too lost in the nitty gritty and we can't see the beauty that's all around us. I mean, right now, forgetting the fact that we're colder, warmer. I mean, the weather can't seem to make up its mind what it wants to do. But then again, that's the season as of the day of this recording, when and what we're doing. But I mean, being in a position to go out and see the cherry blossoms, being in a position to see the beauty of nature coming up around us is one of those things that you wouldn't get if you're just running from this place to that place.
Yeah, let me just add one thing. It's interesting. My wife right now is in Brazil visiting family, and she visited like four or five family members a couple of days ago, and she was telling me about it. And she said, you know what? We didn't take a single photo of ourselves. And she said, and I love that, because nobody was thinking about posting anything on social. We just enjoyed the moment so much that we didn't care. And to me, that's, you know, stopping to smell the roses and being in the moment. And that's another way to look at it. It's being in the moment, enjoying where you are, what you're doing in that place, and making the most out of it, you know, where you are.
So, I mean, you're so right. I mean, one of the things that so many performers have started doing is making you lock away your phone before you can even go and see the concert, because we're all standing there with our phones trying to catch the perfect Instagram worthy video or photo and whatever. And we lose sight of just being in the moment. I mean, mindfulness is one of those things that we become so, it's one of those buzzwords, if you will, like you got to be more mindful, more present and everything. And we try and do a little bit of that, just like slow time down a little bit, but we're constantly, and again, technology may have really sped us along down this path of time moving so much quicker, or it may have made it less. I think it made it feel more like it's moving quicker, simply because we're so connected all the time that we cannot disconnect. And so the days become weeks, become months, become years. I mean, we recently commemorated 4 years since lockdown. And just thinking back, and that it's already 4 years, it's like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And it's just the years become quick, and eventually they become decades and more. And so it's just, like you said, slow it down, enjoy the journey a little bit more. Thank you.
Yeah. And please don't hashtag mindfulness, right?
Yes. So, Paulo, thank you so much. Again, if you're looking for more information, definitely reach out to Paulo on LinkedIn. Also check out briosmedia.com, where you can get additional information and reach out. All that information, again, will be in the description for the episode. So again, Paulo, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I enjoyed our conversation, and congratulations for your podcast. And I love the way you, you know, the way we had a conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you. And again, like you said, take a minute to enjoy the journey that you're on. Take a minute to really be thinking where you are. And a lot of this goes back to the story, right? We said in the beginning that everything is the story. When you're going through your life, you are the lead character in your life, whether you like it or not. If you think about it in that regard, you're the lead person. You're the lead hero of that story. How you go through it, how you're going through the journey, what you're doing as you're going along at each turn, each path that you take, as I think it was Robert Frost that said, the path less taken, you can choose to go right, you can choose to go left. However it is that you're looking at going now, whatever it is, the stories are going to be a big piece that's going to help you also look internally and say, you want to go this way, you want to go that way. When you're working with clients, again, or prospective customers, stories are going to, just like it moves you, move them as well. And it becomes really important for you to think about how it is that you're acting, what you're doing, where you're going, and what you're saying, and just as much what you're not saying, that can really be making the difference in terms of where you're going. There's so much there that you can really be taking advantage of, so much that you can be looking at exactly what it is that you want to be doing and where you want to ultimately get to. On that note, this has been another episode of Mojo, the Meaning of Life in Business. And until next time, here's to your success. This has been another episode of Mojo, the Meaning of Life in Business podcast. If you like what you heard, please consider leaving us a review, liking us, or reaching out to us. You can contact us at bgsicoaching.com and let us know what you think. Thanks so much again for listening.